The opinions expressed on this program are those of program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WPSL presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with your questions and comments at 220-9788-220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Well, happy good morning to you all. A happy Hanukkah, a happy Advent, as we await the coming Messiah in the Christian faith. This is Father Christian, and next to me, that handsome devil is Rabbi Durbin, and even handsomer right across from us is Miggity Mike, the producer extraordinaire who deals with us every Friday morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, man. So honestly, this is the show that you look forward to like all week long.
All week long. It's definitely the most energy we've got going on in this room.
Hey, yo.
Wow, I like that.
I mean, I looked on the YouTube, you know, if you all know this, if you're streaming from another state or whatever, you can watch this. There's a camera. You can actually watch us not doing much except talking into a bunch of microphones. So sorry, it won't be that interesting, except seeing Rabbi Durbin's brand new haircut, which I noticed when I came in. So it's very dapper. Ladies, you might not want to miss that. But there's the YouTube videos. So all the videos are recorded. They're on YouTube, and you can watch them. And I noticed there's a little action going there with the priest and a rabbi show, which is exciting. So why do you think that is, Rabbi Durbin?
Why do I think there's such traction with it?
Do you think it's because people are just so excited about faith and religion, or just because we've told people to go and watch it?
I mean, it may be that people just are really, really into not so much hearing of us, but being able to view us and to see your gorgeous locks of hair, Father Christian.
We got this theme of hair going, so this is going to lead us at some point to Samson if we wanted to talk about this, because what would happen? I did shave my hair one time, and I don't feel like I lost any kind of energy or power, but I froze my butt off because I was in D.C. in seminary at the time.
So maybe that's just it, though. You cut your hair, and you lost your power.
Of heat. Yeah. It was through St. Baldrick's, great nonprofit. Mm-hmm. They throw these big campaigns, big parties. You shave your hair, you raise a ton of money for children with cancer. St. Jude's, but St. Baldrick's is another one that it's just shaving of the hair. It's not just saving the hair and giving. You can have a little bit of hair and shave it. But in any event, so today on this show we got. We are in the midst of a holiday season, and we want to be talking a little bit about Advent. What is Advent? About Hanukkah. What is Hanukkah? And about what happens when Rabbi Durbin's daughter walks into McDonald's and all she sees is Christmas stuff everywhere, and how that makes her feel, and what she does with that. So, but first, I want to start off with a segment of Is It Awkward? If we had some music that we gave to our producer, Michael, we'll go, duh, 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 duh. Is it awkward?
I'll figure something out for next week.
Yeah, see, that's why you're Miggity Mike, the master man there. So is it awkward? So Father Durbin, I think we keep on getting confused with calling each other these religious names. So Rabbi Durbin, is it awkward when you're just sitting around and at a department store or wherever you're at a restaurant, and it's just non-stop Christmas music?
A little bit. I mean, if we would be, you know, a little bit more religiously minded and compassionate, you know, throw on some Christmas tunes. Just throw on a couple Hanukkah tunes. Throw on a couple, you know, Judaic pieces that make us feel a little included in our winter season. You know, it's am I awkward with it? Not really. I listen to the radio a lot. It's kind of hard not to turn on the radio at this season and hear the jingle bells going off, and you know, Christian radio and the such. Actually, don't mind it. I don't hear it in June. I don't hear it in the summer. But there is something about the winter season that we hear a lot of our music. But I don't find it awkward.
Okay. So you started from at the beginning of that conversation. You're
of a little bit.
Yeah, there's you're kind of a process thinker here. Yeah.
You know, it's when I was in high school, I went to an Anglican high school.
God bless you.
So,
it's part of the Episcopal Church.
Yeah, absolutely. Church of England.
Yeah. I knew there was something right about you.
And, you know, the way high school worked is every morning we had prayers. And we went into a big auditorium. We went to a big prayer hall. And we would have to sing largely Christian hymns.
Yeah, Anglican school.
Went to a high school. 700 kids of the 700, maybe 50 of us, 60 of us were Jews, you know, and it was something that, although familiar, it was, not awkward, but there was a part that says, you know, I'm not familiar with these songs. I'm not familiar with this liturgy. And to be a little bit responsive and a little bit compassionate for us as Jews to be able to say, you know, not all of us are good Christians. Some of us are Jews, and you know, as the such, we kind of like the opportunity to represent ourselves as best we can.
But you were going to an Anglican school.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't you, I mean, hey, just be so direct. You signed up for an Anglican school, a Christian school. So that wouldn't that be like me going to a Judaic school or a Jewish school and saying, hey, yo, Rabbi, can we sing some O Come, O Come, Emmanuel?
Yes.
Or take the sacrament, the Holy Sacrament?
You know, the challenge with the high school was, you know, when it was founded in 1829, it was founded as a Anglican high school. But since then, it's a private school and not heavily Christian, but they had their own traditions. And their traditions were every morning we said prayers, whether we said the Lord's Prayer, whether we said around Christmas time that, you know, there would be, you know, massive Christmas trees on the stage and we would be, the general population would be singing Christian melodies. You know, and for us as Jews, we would politely voice our opinion passionately, which was to say that, you know, we banded together and would go to the administration and say, you know, some of us are Jews and we would appreciate the opportunity to have our traditions be noted as well. And it took a long time. I think near the end of my high school career, the college then decided that it would be nice to represent the Jewish faith. So instead of having just that, you know, 40-foot Christmas tree sitting on the stage, that they would give us the 3-inch menorah to celebrate for Hanukkah that was off in the wee vestiges of the
sure.
of the side as an add-on, and you know, and then they gave us a song which was great, not the best song, but you know, they gave us the liturgical moment of go down Moses, way down in Egypt's land and let my people go.
I guess there was an opportunity there, though, that since it's not like Judaism, Christianity are these two extremely very different religions. I mean, we're both Abrahamic religions. Mm-hmm. Jesus was born a Jew, circumcised a Jew, and died a Jew. So there's a lot of play here for the Anglicans, even if they were practicing Anglicans mm-hmm. at your school, to learn tremendously about their own faith and about the Bible, about our biblical history by celebrating Judaism in a way. You know, there's part of me that says, well, it's an Anglican school, so I mean that's what it is, that's what you sign up for, but I see this school could say, well, we got an opportunity here where there could be a lot of growth and development of like, let's talk about this and let's share more about this through songs, through liturgy. What are the things that we do within the Christian sanctuary that are complete reflections that come straight out of the temple liturgy, the work that happened in the temple and in the synagogue. And
I think that's just it.
As opposed to just being PC.
And I think, you know, one of the opportunities that presented itself while we were in high school, especially in an Anglican high school, was that moment of, an educative moment, of being able to look at it and to be able to say, look, you know, let's learn about this together. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, of 700 kids, there are not 700 denominations of Christianity that are attending the school. That you know, there are Jews. And, you know, I grew up in a very large city. I grew up in a city that, you know, had a couple hundred thousand Jews, that it was something that, you know, the culture and the atmosphere was in the air, that it was there. But I think it was a good moment while we were in high school to be able to address the issue and talk in a respectful and, you know, understanding point of view.
I think you nailed it right there. Talk in a respectful and a collaborative point of view, which is just this skill and this art that has just completely been shot like into pieces. I think over the last 8 years is this, or it's even before that, but just this inability to be able to sit down and have the competency to be able to talk about differences, whether they're cultural, ethnic, racial, religious, and have the cultural competency of how do you talk about these things without saying things are just completely just ignorant, or divisive or hurtful or painful. It's a skill that at least here in the States, that just needs to be, that's the growth that needs to happen from leadership, whether it's within religious houses, civic houses, within the schools itself, of how do we have these dialogues and these conversations, interest and curiosity in one another, and just overall cultural competency. You know, I know that there is a study that was done about, you know, when you have diverse workforces, and that actually, if you have a homogenous workforce, it actually does extremely well. If everyone's the same color, it does very well. And then when you add and you try to say, let's have a diverse workforce, sometimes it doesn't, it's not as effective. But if your workforce has a training and a development of cultural competency, of developing that cultural IQ, then your workforce just skyrockets in productivity and efficiency and effectiveness and energy. So a lot of just is this learning and this development of seeing things like at your Anglican school of saying, how does this turn into a huge, awesome God moment where we can grow tremendously as a society? So I think that's what we're trying to do here in this radio show, as we bring on some more guests in the future, of how do we increase and develop that cultural competency. So so speaking of which, you know, so we do want to talk about Advent. We do want to talk about Hanukkah. But before we go to break here, Miggity Mike, Rabbi Durbin, I got to ask you. So what is the one Christmas song you hear that drives you absolutely nuts? Okay. And what is the one that you just like, you know what? I kind of like that one. can we put that on replay?
Jingle Bell Rock, I think, is the one that slightly puts, and again, I mean, no disrespect to those who love it and those who, you know, kind of lend itself to it. It's, kind of like fingers on a chalkboard, nails on a chalkboard.
No matter what version it is.
Mm-mm.
There's like 18 different versions. Well, actually, there's like that one main version that gets played up.
The one that goes, and again, I was trained as a rabbi, not a cantor, but the one that goes, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Yeah, that one slightly puts me on edge a little bit. It's a little too much.
Yeah. Okay.
But look, as one also, as I mentioned, in terms of going to an Anglican high school and having to do, be exposed to a lot of to the liturgy, and one who took Latin for 3 years, as I was duped into it, as somebody said that Latin is the closest language to English. So I thought, great, pretty competent in English. Latin will be a breeze.
No, we all thought that in high school.
It certainly was not. If somebody would have told me that, you know, Latin itself is the closest to legal English and legal terminology. But, you know, when it got to that moment, it was doing Latin for 3 years in high school of, you know, a lot of the Christian liturgy that was put into it, lending itself from the Latin. And, you know, so hearing a lot of that stuff, a lot of the music that was put into it, you know, in terms of, you know, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, or correct my liturgical element, but the, the one of Christ the Lord that was put into Latin, right?
So you appreciate the Latin version better?
I do.
Come all ye faithful, or what are you talking here?
Come all ye faithful.
Come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant.
But I think it's interesting hearing it in English, and I think that this happens with all languages. And then something quite profound and quite quite amazing is when you put it in its original context. You know, putting it in the Latin is quite amazing.
So that's your number one. Oh, come all ye faithful.
In Latin.
Latin version, yes. In Latin. Yeah, it's like, what's my favorite Shakespearean play? Othello, but not the Croatian version. Yeah, mm-hmm. I appreciate it in English. Yeah, sure. the original English.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was saying this to a friend of mine the other day, where he said, so how did that turn out for you? And I said, look, I studied for 3 years. I liked it. I said, the only time that I've ever used it was, for those that remember Bram Stoker's Dracula, the film that was done a few years ago, many years ago. I said, for at least for the first 15 minutes of the film, I could understand it because he speaks in Latin for the first 15 minutes. And I said, well, finally, 3 years of Latin paid off, that I can understand a Hollywood version of Dracula where I can hear it in its original form.
But you use Latin all the time. Miggity Mike, did you take Latin?
Oh, no.
What'd you take?
I took 5 years of Spanish.
Yeah. Good man. Yeah,
I can't speak any of it, but brother, I took 5 years of it.
No usas tu español? Durante de la día?
I heard Espanol.
Okay. All right. It's everywhere, brother.
I know it's everywhere.
You can practicar tu Espanol.
I just smile and nod. Gente.
Okay. All right. All right. Almost to become the number one voting base in the United States here. You know,
so let's push it your way.
Okay. Before we go to break here, Rabbi's got coming at me. Coming in with the hook.
So you asked me in terms of, you know, Christian liturgy and things that we're exposed to. We hear it on the radio, we hear it on the news, we hear it on TV. We're exposed in a Christian world to, you know, those musical moments that we bring together to usher in the season. So from a Judaic perspective, are there any of our Hebrew songs around this season that maybe you're exposed to? I don't think that they play very much on the radio.
Exactly. I mean, it's like the I'm sort of, can you believe it or not? I don't have words to say. I mean, I would, when I was a kid, I think there was a larger Jewish contingency in my grade school, not in my high school, but in my grade school. And so I heard a lot more during this time. And so like, I remember like the dreidel song, you know? And so, and then there's these songs.
The one that goes, dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay. And when it's dry and ready, oh, dreidel, I shall play. Sure.
Yeah. So those are big ones. Mike, do you have any favorite?
Of Hanukkah songs?
Yes.
The only one I can think of is the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song. And that's not me making a joke. It's literally the only Hanukkah song I can think of. Hmm.
Yeah, so we have horribly let you down as your fellow Gentiles, or as your Gentile friends here.
It's okay.
Yeah,
we'll expose you to many more.
Yes. So I mean, this is the when we come back, there's another segment of Is It Awkward, because there's something that I wanted to do. So please stay with us, because when we come back, there was a question, an invitation I wanted to bring to ask Father. Durbin to ask Rabbi Durbin, but I thought it would be the most awkward thing in the world. What is that awkward thing? Stay tuned, come back, and please give us a call, 772-220-9788. And if you're tuning in online, we love you. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a flash. All right. All of you, Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and everything you do to celebrate the good Lord, the good divine, and all of our secular friends out there, too. We love you as well. You know, this there was a moment of awkwardness that I had. You know, we've been talking about this during the show of having these segments here of Is It Awkward? And I definitely had one of these. You know, Rabbi Durbin has been so good at inviting me and my wife Anastasia to various Jewish rituals he's had either at his temple or his house, and even for the memorial service that was had for the tragedy that happened in Pittsburgh, and inviting me up and to say a benediction. And I can't tell you how much of an honor was, but also what conversations that's led to on the streets of Stuart, where people come up to me like, oh, you're the priest guy who my rabbi invited up. And it's almost like this catalyst to start a conversation, start a dialogue of feeling this unity and feeling this oneness. So thank you again for inviting me in. But again, why we do what we do, why we're doing the show. We don't want to be just two dudes sitting around trying to listen to ourselves talk and tell awkward stories about ourselves. But more than that, but more than that. And so, okay. So, you know, it's Advent right now, you know, and speaking of Latin, you know, it's Adventus, you know, the coming. And so and this is not by all Christian denominations. So this is Catholics, Episcopalians, Anglicans, of course, Lutherans. I think Methodists get a little bit into this. It's celebrating the season of Advent. It's this preparation before the birth of Jesus. So the church says we need some time to really prepare our hearts and souls. And usually there was someone who's going to be baptized. And so you need to take this time. And this has really came out of a time when Christianity wasn't really legal.
So let me ask you just a brief non sequitur here. The preparation for you personally for Advent, is there something that you do spiritually before you address your community, before you, you know, engage in prayer? Do you take time for yourself?
I think that's the whole point of what the preaching and the teaching and the whole feel and the mood of Advent is saying. Christmas is a big deal, right? You got the two things in Christianity that matter are Christmas and Easter. Without that, we got nothing. We got nothing, right? So here's the big one. Here's the birth. Here's the incarnation of God on earth. It's Jesus the Christ. And there is a time that's needed to prepare your heart, saying, what are we about to do and celebrate here? And where have I been this whole time over the summer, maybe the fall? Where is my heart? Where is my spirit right now? Is it really prepared to be ready to receive the joy? And also, what is it like to wait? To wait in the desert, to wait like our Jewish brothers and sisters who were in the desert waiting for a promised land, waiting to get there. And recognizing that many of us right now are in a desert time, whether it's personal, whether we feel like in our country, whether in the world, that we look around, there's wars, there's famines, there's divisiveness, there's racism, there's extreme poverty, disparity in socioeconomic scales. So we're still in this feeling, in this waiting. So what do you do with that waiting? And I think Advent is the expectation and the waiting of the hope that we have in the Messiah, and then and then also the second coming. So Advent is the wait and expectation of the second coming of Jesus, the return. So Jesus came, kind of set the stage, said, all right, I'll give you the Holy Spirit, and then ascended and went up to heaven, and then says, I'll be back. See how y'all do, right? But I'm still with you, and I'll be with you always through the gift of the Holy Spirit. So the awkward moment here is knowing how much Rabbi Durbin has invited me, that, and we've had a dialogue before at the temple. You know, we're doing this Advent walk this Sunday at 2 p.m. and we'll start at St. Monica's Episcopal Church in East Stuart. And we're going to go throughout a lot of different places in East Stuart and end up at St. Mary's for a community meal. So all are invited. And yes, that was a big, bold plug for this Advent walk. And six or seven churches are involved. And just please join us. Meet at St. Monica's at 2 p.m. and we'll be singing Advent carols, which are different than Christmas carols. And praying for the community. And we'll have a little Mary and Joseph with us, and they're going to knock on doors in homes and different places, public housing, and ask if there's room at the inn, and they'll be denied to remind us that we have pilgrims amongst us. We have Mary and Joseph amongst us who are on the streets of Martin County, who are knocking on doors and saying, can I get some shelter? Can I get some help? And they're getting a no, right? So it's a reminder for us of our call as Christians. So here's the awkward part. The awkward part is, or is it awkward, that I'm sitting there being like, oh, I should invite Rabbi Durbin. I should invite Rabbi Durbin to this. It'd be amazing. A great community event, this unifying event of all these different churches. We're getting together. We're going to be talking about, you know, the disparity that's out there for the reason why there's poor, that we have a lot of poverty still here, just right here in Martin County, and a lack of services to serve them. And I was like, oh, but that'd be kind of awkward, because we're going to be like singing about the coming Messiah and talking a lot about baby Jesus, little 5 pound, 3 ounce baby Jesus. And so I didn't invite you. I didn't invite your congregation because I thought it would be awkward for you all. But that was, I think, so small-minded of me. So I'm confessing to you, my holy confessor here, but also asking, would it be awkward if you walked and the congregation of Beth Chaim came and walked with us for 2 hours, knowing that there's going to be Advent carols and prayers that are going to be spoken in the name of Jesus?
I think from a Judaic perspective, sure, yes, absolutely. You know, it would be a little awkward. It would be a little uncomfortable. It would be a little out of the ordinary. But I think, you know, and I'll speak personally for myself. I mean, I've never been to one, right? So I don't know. And I think if I don't have the knowledge or the experience, slightly leads to a little bit of ignorance and just not knowing. So part of me that says, you know, absolutely, I'd love to, you know, observe in some way.
Okay.
Perhaps not participate.
Sure.
But, you know, being able to observe. And I definitely appreciate the offer. Unfortunately, I do have an unveiling for one of my members Sunday afternoon. So unfortunately, it would preclude me from being there. But I definitely appreciate the offer.
You know, if any of your congregants would want to observe and be a part, because again, you've invited me to things too, and I know it's different. It's different when you invite me to different rituals over at the temple. There is different because Jesus was Jewish. So Jesus was a Jew and he preached from the Hebrew scripture. So it's not as awkward for me because that's the Hebrew scripture. That's the Bible. Mm-hmm. And that's the liturgy and the ritual that feeds directly into what we do 7 days a week over at the church. So,
but I think that's the same message, right? Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, our temple is open for all who are in search of meaning. And even from a Christian perspective, you know, the temple is open for others of different faiths to come experience what we practice, what we preach, what we live our lives as Jews. Come see our liturgy. Come see how we conduct services. Come see, you know, the beauties of our traditions, right? Tonight, for example, we know that there's a big, I think they call it the Christmas parade is tonight.
I think that's what they call it. Yes. Right? Christmas parade.
We, you know,
pronunciation, right.
I'm glad I got the pronunciation, but you know, the challenge that we faced over many, many, many years with the Christmas parade is that it happens to go down Monterey, which is right in view of our synagogue, which means getting to temple is very difficult on the Friday night when we have the when the county does its celebrations. So this year we actually said, okay, you know what, we'll make it a beach Shabbat. But then we said, well, we can't really do Stewart Beach because the challenge is the causeway and getting to that moment. So tonight, actually at 5 o'clock, we're doing a beach Shabbat at Jensen Beach. Right, it's a very informal service. You know, people bring lawn chairs, beach chairs, kind of sit on the beach. And we go through our liturgy on a Friday night service. It's actually quite amazing. And being able to see the expansiveness of the ocean and God's just creation at that moment is just an amazing thing. So then again, that's, I apologize. That was my shameless plug for join us tonight at 5 o'clock at Jensen Beach. And I know some of my members have said, where in Jensen Beach? And I said, where there's the roundabout on Jensen Beach Boulevard, go east. Until you can't go any further east, until you hit the water, then you'll find us sitting on the beach and preparing
by Tuckahoe Mansion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think it's an interesting question that you raise, which is it awkward or is it uncomfortable for us as Jews? And I think a large part is because of the unfamiliar territory. And I think, you know, as a like-minded individual and as one who very much absorbs and wants to understand what others practice, you know, I think it would be an educative moment to be able to say, you know, interesting, you know, what is this Advent? Where does it come from? What is the word itself? How does it attract so many people to come together? for a common purpose. You know, I certainly would not be opposed to it as a outsider viewing from the outside looking in. A part of me says, you know, I'd love to be exposed to it, because I think the more exposure we have, which is the same premise for this show, right? The show is to expose our listeners, to expose our communities to the beauties of our traditions, however different they may be, to be able to experience it together. And to raise questions. You know, I don't understand why you wear the clothes you wear, or, you know, the liturgy, is there a set liturgy? Is there a structure to your services, or is it just, you know, certain pieces that we put in that create moments of meaning, you know, that type of stuff, to be able to see that.
Yeah. And for all those who are wondering, every time we use this L word, liturgy, you know, it truly means, or the exact definition is, it's the work of the people. But what it is really what you see at service. Mm-hmm. It's the structure, it's the form, it's the worship that's steeped in great meaning, spiritual and sacred meaning, that you'll see whether you come to St. Mary's, you come to Bet Chaim, you come to a lot of services that some of the more non-denominationals don't have more of a structured liturgy. It's more of just straight teaching and a lot of music. But when you go to a service where you're going to see, there's going to be more of a structure there with structured prayers, and there's going to be maybe a prayer of confession, and there's going to be set music that's going to match the prayers that are being said, that leads also to the table. If there's going to be the Holy Sacrament, then that this is all part of the liturgy. So we're here talking about the season right now, though, of when we're in right now, of Advent. If you are a Christian that practices Advent, or has any questions about Advent or about Hanukkah, please give us a call here at 772-220-9788. So, you know, brother, so what I was always told from my Jewish friends was that Hanukkah is not really a big grand holiday really within the Jewish faith. It was more a response of saying, well, all these Christians are getting carried away with the Christmas thing. We kind of need something here, and tell me if I'm getting off base here. But this is what I was just told by friends of mine, saying that's why we do it.
It's No.
So that is a myth.
Quite the opposite.
That is a myth. All right.
So when we go to the story of Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah, steeped in history. You know, so if we look back to it, you know, the whole story of Hanukkah is that the Assyrian Greeks, right, came in, they ransacked the temple in Jerusalem, and a small band of brothers, being Judah Maccabee and his band of brothers.
What year are we right now?
So we're talking probably 21 centuries ago, right? So okay. We're talking just, you know, over 2,000 years ago, 2,100 years ago, 2,200 years ago. You know, we're talking that at that moment, you know, these band of brothers came in and, you know, tried to rededicate the temple through military victory, right? So when we look at it, in and of itself, they go in, they rededicate the temple, they find this little bit of oil, this little cruse of oil that they kindle their Hanukkah menorah that was found in the temple, right? And the word itself, Hanukkah, it means actually to rededicate. So it's kind of going back. You know, with a lot of our festivals and holidays, it is a reenactment of history. You know, so when we see it from that perspective, you know, it's not really a response to Christianity. It more is to remind us of the miracle that God bestowed upon us so that we could practice our faith. For the Assyrian Greeks came in and said, you cannot practice, you can't perform the rite of circumcision, you can't do this, you need to conform to who we are. And I think as we rededicate the temple, and it was an interesting question you raised in terms of being a major or minor holiday. Hanukkah is a minor holiday. Actually, in Judaism, we only have three major holidays. And those are Passover, right, to which we were slaves and now we are free people. 49 days later, on the 50th day, known as Shavuot, when we were given God's law. And then after Yom Kippur, we get what we call Sukkot, when we were living in temporary booths, where we were slightly nomadic people that we didn't have a home. Those, in in Judaism are known as what we call Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrim festivals. And traditionally, those are the times of the year to which you would make holy pilgrimage to Jerusalem and go to the temple, and you would offer, you know, prayers and sacrifice. You know, so in that regard, there are only three, and there are certain, you know, limitations with a major festival that you can and cannot do, but the rest are minor. But yet at the same time, although Hanukkah is a minor festival, we slightly put it into major status. It's huge for our kids, right? We give our kids, you know, traditionally presents. Usually, traditionally, we would give
does
them.
Does that happen just in the States, or does that happen globally?
Oh, no, worldwide.
And is that because of the global excitement of Christmas?
No, I mean, I think you know, with Hanukkah, you know, it always was – you know, from a very traditional perspective, we'd give our kids Hanukkah gelt, right? The chocolate coins, right? There are certain iconic foods that we eat around Hanukkah, right? So when we remember that miracle, that little cruse of oil that was only meant to last one day, one night, but miraculously lasted eight, to which why our festival is 8 days long, and, you know, we increase every single day. You know, the interesting thing with Hanukkah is, you know, the rabbis have always said, you know, which way do we light the Hanukkah? Right. And you had at that time two different schools of thought. You had one from the house of Rabbi Hillel and the other from the house of Rabbi Shammai. And these were two rabbis who were completely opposed to one another. They were, you know, intellectually on different ends of the spectrum. And Rabbi Hillel, to which the Jewish world subscribes to, says that on Hanukkah, you increase, right? So we light on the first night, we light one candle, the second night, the second, third, fourth, all the way up to the eighth. And for Rabbi Hillel, he said, the reason we do it is that each night, as we light our Hanukkah candles, that we are increasing our own sense of spiritual holiness, that we are increasing our connection to God in some way, so that by the end, that we elevate ourselves to a new spiritual realm. Rabbi Shammai says, no, it's the other way around. That actually on the first night of Hanukkah, you light all eight, and you decrease in order for every single night. And when I had heard this interpretation when I was growing up, I was completely blown away. Because I had only heard the Rabbi Hillel way, 1 to 8, which is what we as Jews practice. But if you think about it from a Rabbi Shammai perspective, it's actually quite brilliant what he had thought. Because if you had just a little bit of oil to last one night, but lasted eight, presumably on the first night of Hanukkah, the oil would burn at its brightest and it would decrease. So that on that last night of Hanukkah, when you have that one candle being lit, it is that reminder of that miracle that God performed. So, you know, when my wife and I got married, we decided that, you know, we would do both, kind of embrace our tradition. So I have a very large Hanukkah menorah to which we light the Rabbi Hillel way. And I have a very tiny Hanukkah menorah we light the Rabbi Shammai way. And I think that there's something really beautiful about that tradition. You know, and the notion itself that we eat oily foods. Absolutely. Anything deep fried in oil, right? It's tasty.
So Kentucky Fried Chicken's a good time right now.
KFC.
That's a great Hanukkah meal.
We could say, you know, we eat latkes, which latkes, just for our listenership, is not traditional, right? Latkes itself originate out of Eastern Europe. The potato, you know, certainly was the potato originates in Peru. It goes from Peru throughout Europe into Eastern Europe. And if you think about it, you know, the times at which we harvest potatoes, right, it's usually around the fall. Hanukkah falls around, you know, December. So if you think about it, by the time you harvest a potato in November, by the time it gets to December, it starts sprouting, right? It's going to start turning. And one way to preserve that potato is to grate it and deep fry it, right? And from a Judaic perspective, want not, waste not. We don't want to waste anything. So in that regard, that's where the latke really became in its understanding, very slightly traditional to Judaism for Hanukkah.
Okay, so let me just interrupt real quickly. So where are we right now on the Hanukkah, on the Hanukkah
season? So tonight,
being
Friday night, being Shabbat tonight, we are on our sixth night of Hanukkah. So the end of Hanukkah will be Sunday evening. For, of course, our festivals and holidays start at night and go throughout the next day till sunset. So Monday will be the last the eighth day of Hanukkah, and when Monday night falls in, Hanukkah will be over.
Okay, so Monday that's when it's over, right? Yep. And it's like there's this dual theme as well within the Advent time, is we have the four candles that we light. So we're working our way towards Christmas, and for Advent, for those denominations that practice it, there are these four candles that each have a different theme depending on which denomination. So for some, it's in the Episcopal, well, not probably all Episcopal churches, but a lot of them, at least ours, is hope, peace, joy, and love. And those are the four that lead you through it. And so there's a different color. And some, it's usually blue is the color of Advent, close to like purple. And because there's a little bit of a relationship with Lent. Lent is the preparation season for Easter, the other big thing, right? So without Easter, we got nothing. Jesus was just, you know, a prophet, right? But there is this time of each week celebrating this theme that's going to work us through. And in Advent is hope, peace, joy, and getting to love. And that is should be the focus really of the sermons and of the teachings and during this time of expectancy, but again, surrounded by a candle, the power of the candle and the color. And the third week, is the rose candle as well, which represents a lot of denominations. Look at it, represents Mary, you know, because now Mary gets into the picture. The first 2 weeks is more about John the Baptist and about the coming and about the preparing your way for the make straight the paths. It's a lot from Isaiah, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths, you know, voice coming from the wilderness, talking about this Messiah that is coming, prepare, get ready. And it's more a little bit of fear. Of saying, are you ready? If the Messiah walked through the door right now, how you been? How's your life been so far? Are you ready for him? I don't know if you saw this. It went viral recently. There was a pastor, I think out in Atlanta, who began his sermon. He literally flew in. He was on the sort of like circus, like trapeze things, and came in like floating in. And it was controversial because people thought that maybe he was trying to compare himself to Christ. But I didn't mind it. I thought what he's doing is that, you know, he probably woke up his congregation, but then he also was like, what would you do if the Mashiach, if Jesus Christ just showed up right now? Where are you right now with your sense of redemption, your sense of healing, your sense of wholeness? Are you good? And if you're not, Advent is the time to really take the time to get good, to really, if you need to take the confession, if you need to really say, Lord, I need to seek your presence more closely. I feel like I'm still waiting, expecting and searching, and I want to feel you here and be present in this time of this wilderness for it. This
but don't,
is the time.
Don't as for you as a Christian, isn't every day a time to which we search within ourselves to see where we are, how we've progressed, what challenges have presented itself, how do I turn or change in some way? Why is it during Advent as opposed to 365 days a year?
Well, I think that's the beauty of, since we're disciples, this idea, a disciple being disciplined, that there's a discipline. It's like the church becomes this workout, you know, like this gym that we go to work out. And you, as in any good workout, you have a schedule, you have this gym schedule that you follow. And since the Christian faith is based on just Christmas and Easter, that there is this time that says you're right, you should be doing it every single day. But this is a time where we're very intentional as a community. We're going to do this in your individual prayers. You might be doing this every single day, but this is a time as a community of this expectancy. And let's not forget about the second coming of Jesus Christ, that yes, we want to stay here in the present moment, but he will return. And then also to examine being in this desert time right now as a community, we do that together, where you might be doing it individually all the time and doing self-reflection. But then when we get to Lent, it's even more so, it's more penitential. That's where the confession comes in. That's where we really start to really look at ourselves. And obviously the Jewish season has something very similar as well. So where it's just this reflection of our spiritual health. of looking in the mirror, but as a, but most importantly, as a community, and having our liturgy reflect that, having our music reflect that, having our prayers reflect that. And because if you just don't do it and you just get to Christmas, then Christmas loses that's the zeal, the love, the prize, the beauty of it, the birth of really what does it mean of this Christ child coming into the world. Because we forget. And we forget, and we need to, we forget really what the beauty of Christmas is. And I think as Christians, that's what the liturgy does. And that's what Advent does, is the coming of saying, have we forgotten? Have we gotten too busy? Have we gotten too busy with everything else we got going on in our lives? Take the time, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour. Can you give me 2 hours? Can you give me an hour? You know, that's what we're saying God is saying, to really prepare your heart and your mind and be in the stillness and the presence of God, and really feel His coming into your life. Can you still yourself and be present in that? So, but I do love the similarity between the two. So after Monday, then does the I keep on coming back to this? Does it ever, or is it just like, so Hanukkah's over? We still got this Christmas thing still going on. Is it just feel like, oh, yeah, it's just kind of like this season that's happening around us? Or is it part of it's just like you kind of get into the season and it's the joy of it at least? Or is it part of it just being like, oh, my gosh, when will this end?
So as one who went to rabbinical school in possibly the most Christian country in the world, being England, it was always interesting when I was in rabbinical school that, you know, when it came to October, the lights on Oxford Street, the lights downtown in the city of London itself would be put up. And a part of me says, it's October. Why? It's always in your face. So let me share with you a story, which I mentioned to you earlier. I took my kids yesterday. Please don't judge me and I hope my wife isn't listening. So I took my kids yesterday. My kids do gymnastics. They had gymnastics last night. And when they finished, my oldest daughter had said, you know, Dad, can we go to McDonald's? Don't judge me on McDonald's. But, you know, it's Hanukkah. Their fries are deep fried in vegetable oil. So, you know,
boom. What
a wonderful opportunity for them to experience the oil and the miracle of Hanukkah. But beyond that, so my kids had said, my eldest daughter had said, you know, Dad, can we go inside? And so I went inside and they got their meals and their fries and, you know, their chicken nuggets and this and the other. And nearing the end, my daughter, I could see she was getting very frustrated and just slightly agitated. And I said, what's going on with you? And she said, you know, Dad, it's really unfair. So I thought to myself, unfair? What's unfair? You both got toys. You both got your food. Did I not get you what you wanted? And my daughter had said, no, Dad, it's not the food. It's look around. Everything here is put up with Christmas trees and, you know, celebrating the Christmas season. But I don't even see one thing that denotes, we shouldn't say the word denote, but I see nothing here that resembles Hanukkah. Why doesn't McDonald's have a Hanukkah? And I said, well, that's a great question. I said, why don't you do me a favor? Why don't you go talk to the manager? Okay. And I thought to myself, the second I said, go talk to the manager, that my daughter would kind of retreat to herself and say, well, you know, I'm a little shy. I don't really want to do it. And then suddenly I see my 7.5-year-old stand up from the table and walk.
Boom.
And she went up and said, you know, I would like to see a Hanukkah. And you know, the person at McDonald's had said, well, you know, I'll talk to my manager. And my daughter kind of went away, not fully, feeling like she had been heard, and said, you know, Dad, what can we do? And I said, you know, Ellie, you're more than welcome to write a letter to the president of McDonald's and say, you know, I've noticed going to many of your establishments that it is all Christmas oriented and there is not one thing about Hanukkah. So, you know, would you mind? So I said to her last night when we were driving home, I said, you know, if you want help writing that letter, I'll help you write a letter to the president McDonald's, and you know, we'll see where it goes from there. And I think that story in and of itself is the essence of it too, is it's in your face. And all it takes is just a little bit of religious sensitivity to understand that, look, we are Jews. There are Jews in this world. We celebrate a different holiday. And just to be noted, just to be recognized in some way that, you know, it is Hanukkah. You know, we are told as Jews, and we practice this as well, is that you know, the Hanukkah or Hanukkah menorah is not meant to be placed in our kitchen or in our living room. It's meant to be placed on a windowsill so that it can be presented out. And it's a twofold understanding. One is that inwardly, as a Jew, it is, I am celebrating a holiday as we kindle the lights of Hanukkah, that I bring that warmth, I bring that message of Hanukkah that, you know, we are here and we are celebrating. The second is to present to the outside world as they look in and see our homes is that there is a Jewish family celebrating a holiday, presenting the light out to the world.
I think also that your daughter might want to write a letter to maybe the Mayor Stewart. You know, if she doesn't see an awareness, or if she struggles with that, you know, I want to applaud you on empowering your daughter to put her in the driver's seat, that mm-hmm. you're not fighting the fight for that she's doing that. That's mm-hmm. awesome. And I got a note in a McDonald's. Remember the two Asian kids who came in there and said, hey, I don't see Asian representation here. And you see this where they put up an old picture of and they created their own advertisement and put it up into McDonald's, and McDonald's notices that that's amazing. They gave these guys a huge $1 million contract or $100,000 contract because of their ambition. So you never know what's around the corner for your daughter for being ambitious. Maybe she can do something like that as well. So, all right, we got an Advent walk this Sunday that's going to be at 2 p.m. starting at St. Monica Episcopal Church that will walk through East Stewart praying and singing Advent carols and really blessing the community, a unifying community event that also for all of our Jewish brothers and sisters, of course, welcome if you wish to come and participate or view. And and brother, you have something you want to quickly pitch here?
So on Saturday night, tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock, we are having our Hanukkah Havdalah, end of Shabbat Hanukkah dinner at the temple. That is tomorrow night at 6 o'clock.
All right. God bless you all. Happy holidays. We'll see you next Friday.